welcome back to the sixth edition of the Matt Cummins Fantasy Baseball Podcast. And I just received an email, and I am picking first in my NFBC 15 team. No, this is my 12-team league. But yeah, I'm really excited. I get to pick first in my 12-team mixed league for high stakes, which is great, which means now I get to get Mike Trout, which is good. But anyway, in this episode, I'm going to discuss first base. But before I do that, I want to get some housekeeping out of the way. Well, wait, I just got a text from my friend who I texted about this. And he's not happy that I have the first pick and he has the seventh pick. Anyway, where was I? So housekeeping. You can find me on Twitter at mattcummins.com. At Matt Cummins. You can read my work at mattcummins.com, as well as Baseball Professor, as well as Through the Fence Baseball. So I've actually started writing daily now at Baseball Professor. It's called the Fantasy Roundup. If you go there right now, you'll see two or three articles from me in the last week, because I started it on Wednesday, I believe, or Tuesday. So if you want a breakdown of yesterday's news, feel free to check that out every day, and you'll find, you know, I write about 800 to 1200 words a day, and that's some pretty good information in there, and I think that you'll enjoy it. The first thing I wanted to talk about was fantasy draft strategy in general, and this idea came to me after listening to the Flags Fly Forever podcast with Mike Gianella and Brett Sayer. And if you're not listening to that podcast, it's really, really good, and I highly recommend it because I listen to it the day it comes out, usually. So towards the end of the podcast, in episode 10, wait, it's my friend again. He's joined the podcast. He's upset. Okay, never mind. He's not. Well, actually, he's a little upset. But anyway, where was I? So at the end of their podcast, they talked about category targets for the drafts that they're targeting at, you know, during their draft. And it got me thinking about my draft targets, because I have a draft coming up on Tuesday, which is an expert league draft, as well as my Mike Trout NFBC draft on Sunday. And these are both 12-team mixed leagues. And one is an auction and one is a snake based draft. But the categories, the categorical thresholds are going to be the same because they're both 12-team mixed leagues. But anyway, so in the past, I would read other people's category thresholds for each individual category and use that as my baseline when I go into drafts. And I realized that's not really good, because this year I have my own projections. You know, everyone's projections are going to have a little bit more home runs or a little less home runs than your projections or my projections. So then I started thinking about, okay, so what does it take to win a league? So basically, in a 12-team mixed league, you need to come in fourth place, probably. If you come in fourth place in every category, that's enough for you to probably win, if not, you know, come in second place. But if you come in fourth place in every category, you should pretty much win your league. If you come in third place, you're really going to win your league. And so I started thinking about it in terms of, okay, so if you need to finish in fourth place in every statistical category, you know, what percentage of that, you know, do you need in terms of the actual hole? So if there were, we'll just say, for example, if there were 1,000 home runs hit last year in a league, and fourth place required 280, therefore you would only need to have 280 home runs this year to get in fourth place. However, we're not drafting last year's stats, and, you know, if you have your own projections in place, you can actually figure out, okay, this is the player pool. The player pool consists of 168 players. And within that 168 players, you have projections for those players, and you can figure out, okay, for my projections, I'm estimating as a whole that the player pool will have 1,100 home runs. Therefore, you don't really need 280, because you need more than that, because you're projecting more home runs this year. So therefore, you want to figure out, okay, you need to figure out, okay, what percentage of last year's home runs was necessary for fourth place, and apply that percentage to your projections. So So, for example, like I said earlier, if there were 1,000 home runs hit and fourth place had 200, we'll just say 200, that means 20% of the home runs, you need 20% of the home runs in the player pool to come in fourth place. Therefore, if you apply that 20% threshold to your own projections, and then so for me, it's 20% times, and I said 1,100 home runs. So actually, in actuality, you're going to need to hit, you need to acquire 220 home runs. So I went ahead and did that for every category, and I figured out, okay, what, how many home runs do I need based upon my projections, and how many runs, strikeouts, and everything. So now I have my own statistical benchmark entering my drafts now, which is actually really helpful, and it's something I never really thought of before. Because like I said before, I would just read what Jason Collette said. So, oh, if Jason Collette is targeting 250, I was like, all right, so then I'll target 250, but his projections are probably different than mine. So therefore, maybe, you know, he underrated home runs overall, and I overestimated home runs. So, but either way, you need to have your own statistical thresholds that you're looking for to acquire, you know, on draft day. Having your own, first of all, having your own projections is very helpful. And then from there, you can actually qualify or quantify, you know, how many do you need in each statistical category. So based on my research, in a 12-team league, you need about 8.6% of the runs scored. You need 8.8% of home runs. You need 8.6% of the RBIs and 9.3% of the stolen bases to come in fourth place in a 12-team mixed league. And you also need a 270 to 271 batting average to finish in fourth place. For ERA, you need to have a 3.43 ERA. You need to have a WHIP of 1.20, and you need about 8.7% of the total strikeouts in the league in order to finish in fourth place. Now, I didn't provide saves or wins because those are highly variable, and you know there's going to be a lot more fluctuations in terms of the wins and saves. And also, everyone has their own method with wins and projecting out wins. A lot of fantasy players that I found out, they'll project, you know, 15 wins for 30% of the pitchers in their projections. And that's not true. There's like every year there's only about, I don't know, like maybe 5 to 10% maybe they get 15 wins. So what they do is that they'll project 15 wins for, you know, 30%, and they'll project like 16 to 17, 18 wins for the elite pitchers and do it that way, which is fine as long as you keep it normalized. But for me, I undervalue wins. I give most players or most pitchers, you know, between 10 to 13. And for the really good guys like Darvish and Kershaw, I'll provide an estimate of 15, 16, 17, 18 wins for those guys. But anyway, you need about, like I said before, if you have these category thresholds, and let's see. So I have my 15 team somewhere. Oh, okay. So actually, for a 15-team league, the category thresholds are 7% of runs, 7.23% of home runs, 7.04% of RBIs, 7.73% of stolen bases, as well as 7.12% of strikeouts, a 3.495 ERA, a 1.217 WHIP, and a 15-team mixed league. So those are the ratios that I found that you need to get in order to get in fourth place. And I think this is actually going to be an article for me because I've been writing a lot for Baseball Professor, and I've kind of neglected my own blog. So I think I'll probably do that probably after today. But I think it's really cool, and that's really helped me out now. So now when I enter my drafts, now I have all my thresholds that I want, and I will be ready to go for all my drafts this week anyway. All right, so let's go ahead and talk about one more thing. So speaking about my blog, I wanted to talk about a blog post I wrote a couple days ago about Jose Abreu of the White Sox. Sorry, I blanked there. And what I wrote, and this kind of parlays into what I wanted to talk about in this episode about first base, is that first base, after the first, I would say, 11th, 12th first baseman all the first basemen are basically the same. They're all going to be like a 260 to 270 hitter with 20 home runs and, you know, 80 RBI. No, maybe 85 RBI and about 65 runs. And they're all pretty much the same there. If you're going to be successful this year, you're going to need to have a player that supersedes their draft value, that outperform where you got them. When I was looking at the second tier, not the second tier, but like after the first 12 or 11 first basemen are taken, the player that most has that ability to outperform their ADP is Jose Abreu. And this is a player that has the ability to hit 35 to 40 home runs if everything clicks. The precipice of my article, not my article, but like of my blog post that I wrote was the scouting report that Keith Law posted on his blog at ESPN. And he talked about, let me pull it up here. And he talked about how the swing looks really good, how it's very clean and pretty, and it's possible that he could be able to hit for a fairly good average. Now, if you read my fantasy guide, you would have noticed that I quoted a Ben Badler article that he wrote right when Abreu was signed by the White Sox. What I quoted was that he had concerns, or maybe the industry had concerns about his ability to hit plus velocity or plus fastball velocity. And so when I read Keith Law's scouting report that came out a few days ago, it obviously contradicted what the original scouting report was from Ben Badler, and also it kind of conflicted with the Baseball America handbook scouting report as well. So Keith Law's article got me thinking about Jose Abreu, because originally I kind of just projected Abreu to have a 235, 240 batting average with, you know, 32 home runs. And the batting average was so low that it kind of brought him down in the rankings in terms of the second tier or the next tier of first baseman. So then I reevaluated everything and I actually bumped him up. I bumped up his batting average and I bumped up his home runs, I believe. And so anyway, I was kind of rambling there. So what I was saying is that if Abreu can hit 35 home runs and be a 250 hitter, he's basically a Mark Trumbo. And Mark Trumbo is being taken probably. Mark Trumbo is being taken right now in the sixth round. No, it's not. Well, he's being taken right now in the seventh round, 61st overall, 62nd overall in NFBC drafts, which means that, you know, this is a player, Jose Abreu, that if he just hits a fairly okay batting average, this is a player that will provide a huge ROI for your fantasy team. And this is a player that's why I bumped him up in my projections, so that he's not buried at the end, at the bottom anymore. And that this is a player that I will be targeting now, probably both of my 12 team mixed leagues, depending upon who my first baseman is and how the rest of my team is shaping up. If I have a team that is fairly strong in home runs, then I will probably pass on Abreu. But if I suppose I take, or I take Ellsbury with my first pick, which I don't foresee happening, but maybe it does happen. Or I take Ellsbury in my second round, and, you know, I've built my team up so that I'm kind of lacking in home runs, then I'll probably reach for Abreu or spend the extra dollar on Abreu on draft day. Because this is a player now, based upon what I read from Keith Law, that this is a player that is worth taking a shot on, especially in a shallow league. In a 15 team league, you know, there's a more potential of a blow up in your face type of scenario. But in a shallow league, this is a player that you should reach for. And if he doesn't pan out, you can find a player like Adam LaRoche on the waiver wire in your league probably anytime you want. Okay, so let's talk about other first basemen. So the first baseman I wanted to talk about was Albert Pujols. This is a player that this probably has the widest opinions on. Some people really like him, and the vast majority don't like him. He's currently going as 41st overall, which is, I think, the start of the fifth round, which makes him the seventh first baseman being taken right now in drafts. And this is a player that I've never been a proponent of Pujols now for the last 2 years, and the reason is that he has been on a downward swing for like the last 4 years. His isolated power has been going down. His weighted on base percentage has been going down. This is a player that historically has not been looking really good. Now, but the thing is that if he played a full year last year, now obviously we all know that he was dealing with the plantar fasciitis and had to, you know, he only played like half a year. But let's think about what actually happened last year. So if he actually played the full year, never went on the DL, he would have finished the year with 94 RBIs, 25 home runs, and 72 runs with a 280 batting average, I guess, which is pretty good, especially for first base. And now this year, you know, the plantar fasciitis he tore it, and that means that it's fully healed or should be fully healed. By all accounts, during spring training, he looks fine at spring training. So this is a player that, you know, he may no longer have an enormous upside, but the 300 batting average probably will no longer exist, but this is still a player that can still be a 275 to 280 batting average player and still hit 25 to 30 home runs. And some people consider his floor to be 30 home runs, which I think is a little high. I think his floor is more around like 27 home runs. But this is still a player that's going to be hitting in front of, or I'm sorry, not in front of, but behind Mike Trout for a full year, which means that he's going to have a lot of at-bats with him on base, which means they'll have a really good opportunity to drive in a lot of runs. And also, if Josh Hamilton, you know, can sustain his second half performance and be a 250 hitter, he can actually score, you know, 90 plus runs too if everything works out. If everything works out, essentially. So basically, what I'm saying is that I'm not really excited about Pulse, but I think drafting him, you know, at the start of the, what did I say? Was it the fifth round or the sixth round? I forgot what I said now. At the start of the fifth round is, you know, it's okay. You know, I think it's a little high, but his upside is good enough so that he could still be that, you know, 30 home run player, you know, 30 home run, 100 RBI, you know, maybe 90 run player. So there you go. So let's talk about someone else. So the next player I'm going to talk about is Alan Craig. Alan Craig has an ADP of 57 in NFBC leagues, which makes him the ninth first baseman being taken, which is a little low for me considering, you know, how good he was last year. Now, obviously he didn't hit for much power with only, I think, 13 home runs, with only 13 home runs last year. But that also coincided with a career low home run to fly ball rate of 11%. Prior to last year, his normal career home run to fly ball rate was 14 to 15%. So we're talking about a pretty big drop off in his home run to fly ball rate. You know, I believe that the home runs will positively regress in 2014. Now, there is some baggage with Alan Craig. The first is that he hasn't played a full year ever in the major leagues. And also playing right field for about two-thirds of the games doesn't really help matters very much. Now, from what the Cardinals have said, it looks as though that he'll play right field against righties, and then he'll play first base against lefties, which means that Matt Adams would most likely sit against lefties, which is actually really good for Alan Craig's fantasy value because that will lessen the toll on his body throughout the entire year. So I think this is a player that is someone that I would grab before where he's going in drafts right now, because there aren't that many players that will give you a 300 plus batting average with, you know, 15 to 20 home runs. Now, obviously last year he didn't do that, but I'm a big believer that he can hit 20 again in 2014 and still drive in 90 plus runs as well as score 80 plus runs, especially in that Cardinals lineup. Okay, so the next player I wanted to talk about was Prince Fielder. This is a player that it seems as though that the fantasy community is believing that he will have a big turnaround from last year, and I don't think that's going to happen. Simply because I think that he has lost some of his bat speed. And the reason why I believe that is because his ability to hit for power against the fastball has been in decline now for three straight years in a row, year over year. And last year was the lowest slugging percentage of his career against fastballs. for the entire year. So a lot of people are projecting that he can return to the 30 plus home run, you know, home run power numbers that he hit, you know, previously in his career, and especially since he's playing in Texas. And I don't believe that's going to happen. Because of the bat speed decrease, as well as the fact that the Rangers ballpark, it closed the area behind home plate, so there's no more the ball doesn't carry as much anymore as it did before they closed off that section behind home plate. So I don't believe, even though Texas is still a good ballpark to hit in, but I don't think it's no longer the bandbox that it once was 2, 3, 4 years ago. So expecting Prince Fielder to return back to the way he was, you know, I don't see that happening. And a lot of people are overstating his off-the-field issues with his divorce from his wife. I think that's been overplayed, and I don't think that really had that much of an effect, because if you look at his second-half stats, his batting average increased, you know, a good amount, but his ability to hit for power was essentially the same as it was before, you know, during the first half of the year. So there wasn't really much of an uptick in that at all. So this is a player that I have ranked as the fifth best first baseman, which means that I'm not going to have him in any leagues, and that is fine with me, because this is a player that is on the downswing and not on the upswing, and I'd rather take a player like Freddie Freeman, Alan Craig, or Eric Hosmer ahead of him, because they still have upside, and Prince Fielder has more downside, and I don't think that this is a good situation at all for Prince Fielder, and I don't think this is going to happen again. I don't think he's going to provide the value of his ADP right now. So this is a player that I say stay way far away from. So the last first baseman I wanted to talk about was Brandon Belt. For some fantasy experts, this is a player that, you know, a lot of fantasy owners are buying into as a 20 plus home run first baseman. And I don't foresee that happening, because AT&T Park is brutal, probably the most brutal ballpark to hit for power for left-handed hitters. For example, last year he had a 14% home run to fly ball rate away from AT&T Park, while at AT&T Park he had a 7% home run to fly ball rate. So you're talking about 100% increase in home run to fly ball rate away from AT&T Park. Also, I'm not a big believer in the batting average. I mean, I still think he'll hit 280 plus, but some fantasy owners are projecting him to be a 295, 300 plus hitter, and I don't foresee that happening, because last year's batting average was fueled by a really good second half of the season, where he had a 326 batting average with a 392 BABIP, which I don't foresee happening again at all. So, but like I said before, I still project him to be a 280 hitter with about 18 home runs. And that's really good considering where he's playing. So I think the fact that I don't think that he'll hit more than 21 home runs this year, unless he has a, you know, a really good home run to fly ball rate outside of AT&T Park. And I don't see the batting average being there. So this is a player that he's still really good. And the fact that if he played anywhere else in the majors, this guy could be a borderline top 10 first baseman for me. But since he plays in that ballpark, this is a player that he's still good, but I think right now where he's being taken is a player that, yeah, he's going 14th overall, is a player that, you know, I'd rather take someone else. Like, I'd rather wait for a Brandon Moss, for example, who's going a little bit after him. Okay, so that concludes the first base position. I will be back in 1 minute.
You're reading all the books you know, recalling all the words you're on, giving me another go, one last time then I suppose. You bury me in my home, bury me in my home, bury me in my home, it's alright.
And welcome back to the Matt Cummins Fantasy Baseball Podcast. So today was a little bit different in terms of the recording. After I stopped recording the meat of the podcast, I actually went to go watch the new 300 movie, and it's actually really good. If you like the first one, you'll definitely like the second one for sure, because I like the first one a lot, and it was really good. It was a little hard to follow the storyline, but it all made sense after, you know, the first 35 minutes or so, but it was pretty good. The lead actor isn't as good as Gerard Butler, but I think most people can't capture what Gerard Butler brought to the first movie, but it was very interesting in terms of the lead female character, the lead bad guy. She was really good. She's probably she was actually the best part of the movie, if you ask me. And it was really good. It was also, what's funny is that the bald guy, the bald Serbian dude, Persian dude, whatever, who's the bad guy, he's the same guy that's in the movie The Last Stand, which is a below average film, if you ask me. But it was really interesting to see how he looked compared to in that movie, in terms of the movie The Last Stand versus 300, because he looks like a completely different person in 300 than he does in the other film. But yeah, so anyway, yeah, so this movie I definitely recommend checking out if you saw the first one and you liked it, then if you see this one, you'll definitely like this one too. And in terms of the art direction, it was pretty obvious that the director was trying to kind of copy what, I forget his name now, but the first director did. And he did it pretty well, but you can tell that he was kind of like, you know, the new director didn't put his own spin on it. It's pretty much just a remake of the same style as the last one, which actually isn't that bad of an idea or call on the director's part, because people want to see pretty much what they saw in the first one. So, yeah, so I'm still actually a little amped up from seeing it, because I literally just got back home and had some beans. But yeah, anyway. Oh, our music today is again the Brother Kite, and I think we're going to be using them for a while now. So go to thebrotherkite.com and buy their stuff, because they're really good. So the next podcast is either going to be starting pitchers or relief pitchers. I think since we're getting close to the end of the month, I think I may just combine them into one podcast. Yeah, but anyway. What's funny is that it seems like every day now there's a pitcher, another pitcher going, or that's experiencing forearm tightness or forearm, something to do with the forearm, and they're about to head to Tommy John surgery, which is really, which really sucks for the players and for the fantasy owners who drafted them already. And actually that's another reason why I always recommend doing your drafts later in the month. If you have any option at all, do it, you know, as late as possible, so that you don't draft a player and have him succumb to injury like this, like a Brandon Beachy or a Chris Medlin or a Patrick Corbin. Because the last thing you want to have happen is to use a mid-round pick on that player and have him be gone for the entire year. Because it kind of derails your entire strategy and kind of puts you behind the eight ball amongst your competition. So, but anyway, so I think the next podcast will come out probably in a few days. Probably won't come out until at least after Tuesday, I think, because I have my draft on Tuesday. But it'll definitely come out before Sunday and after Tuesday, so within that time range. And I'm sure there's so many of you that they're waiting hand and foot for the next one of these. all right. So that is it for today's show. And I'm going to finish eating my beans, and I'm going to mix this, and then I will post this on mattcummins.com. Oh, one more thing to note is that I didn't say in the show's beginnings that the rankings that I'm referring to and the analysis that I'm providing can be found at mattcummins.com/fantasyguide, because that's where you'll find a 150,000 word document where I outline player information and other fantasy baseball strategies that you may be interested in reading about. So, yeah. All right. So have a good weekend, everyone. Bye. The conversation's ending in ways.
back, you may not find me waiting for you. You see them burn with anger as we cut ourselves in two, so my heart's consumed if you enter. The pain of doubt divides every feeling inside. How can a love, true love, decide just where the power lies? Those who get too far. Please come back soon. I am right here.